In this conversation, we're deeply honored to be joined by author and peace pilgrim Satish Kumar. A lifelong activist and former monk, Satish has been inspiring global change for over 50 years, from his pilgrimage for peace across India and America to co-founding Schumacher College, a world-leading college for ecological studies and holistic education. Now in his 80s, Satish has devoted his life to campaigning for ecological regeneration and social justice.
Satish, thank you so much for making time for us. This is really, really special for me to be able to do this recording.
It's always a pleasure, Daniel. My pleasure.
We go back a long time now, and if I reflect on my own life and how incredibly impactful on many levels you as a person, but also your life's work with regard to having set up Schumacher College have been on my life. And I know for a fact, because many of them are my friends, that I'm not the only one. Then I sometimes marvel at the ripples that have gone out from you and your work. So I'm a bit...
It's very kind and generous of you to say those words, and I'm humbled. Thank you.
And also, like, as I was reflecting on that, I was thinking how many people you've brought together, not just the students at Schumacher College, but all these people you've brought together and who have now passed on and moved on to different existence, like Brian Goodwin or Henry Bortoft and Margaret Calhoun. And to think that these people had a place where they could exchange and learn together and build a picture of participatory reality, our embeddedness in this living being, Gaia, together. That is just magical.
The thing for me, Daniel, has always been that these principles, such as ecology, spirituality, holistic thinking, holistic science, all these principles have to be embodied. If they are just academic disciplines and not embodied, then they don't have power. The power of ideas manifest when they become embodied. And the people I looked for and searched for to teach at Schumacher College was those who were not just thinkers, who were not just intellectuals, who were not just academics writing books and doing research, but who were living it, who were embodying it. So Brian Goodwin was that kind of person. And Margaret Calhoun and Henry Bortoft. And also when I ran short courses, I was looking for the same quality of people. So I started Schumacher College with James Lovelock. And James Lovelock was an embodiment of Gaia. This was not just a theory for him. He lived it. He was my neighbor in Devon. And we used to walk together on Dartmoor. And I felt that he was a saintly Gaian man. He was not mere scientist and not mere intellectual. And the same way I felt with a number of other people, Arne Naess was the same thing. He was not just a professor, but he embodied deep ecology. The same way with Vandana Shiva, same way with Fritjof Capra. All these people who came to teach at Schumacher College, I was looking for people who are embodiment of their philosophy and not just academics. That was the main reason that I got people who I got to teach there.
Satish, you recently published a book to celebrate 30 years of regenerative learning at Schumacher College and the success of your head, hands, and heart approach to education. Can you tell us a bit more about that framework and why it's been so successful?
Regenerative learning is basically holistic learning. Now, how do you capture the idea of holistic learning in a more graphic and a practical language? So we called it education of head, education of hearts, and education of hands. So when in our modern educational system, a student goes to school or university, the teachers look at the students and they think that in practical terms, this young person has no body. only head, and only half head, because we have two spheres of our brain, left brain and the right brain. So our educational system does not touch the right brain. So all our education from age 5 primary school to secondary school to university, at least 50 to 20 years of our formative life is spent only training the half brain, left brain, and no hands and no heart, and no practical skills, no gardening, no cooking, no craftsmanship, no art, no music, no dancing, no relationship, no love, no compassion, nothing in our education. Education is only about mathematics and science and history and analysis and how I get a good job. So that's a very narrowly focused education at the moment. Regenerative learning is about making education rounded. So we, of course, train the left brain. We need left brain. We appreciate and celebrate our reasoning and scientific and analytical mind. We need it, but not at the expense of our imaginative, intuitive, creative, and relational mind. And so we say whole brain, left hemisphere and right hemisphere, the whole head. And then heart. Not only thinking, but also feeling. How do you feel about your action? How do you feel compassion, kindness, generosity, openness? All these qualities are not measured intellectually, but they are heart qualities. And so that is very important for Schumacher College, to build that relationship and relate to each other and relate to nature. Love yourself, trust yourself, love nature, love animals, love human community, trust the future. And all those things are kind of, you can say, heart-based education. And then hands are very important. And therefore, our students engage in gardening, cooking, some craft work, something to do with your hands. Because we humans are not just intellectual beings. We are makers. We are creators. We build houses. We build furniture. We have hands. And these hands are miracle. What a kind of magic that you take an ordinary piece of clay and transform into a beautiful pot with lovely colors like Bernard Leach. Your hands can make it. You don't have to depend on a machine. Your hands are organic and creative and coordinated with your brain, with your imagination, with your creativity, with your mind, and with your feeling. Such a beautiful human body and such a magical human body we have, but we are discarding it. So regenerative learning is learning not just a consumer, not just earning money for your name, fame, power, position, and so on. You learn to regenerate, to create, to be creative, to be imaginative. And so this is the heart of holistic learning at Schumacher College, the education of head, education of heart, education of hands, education of whole body. So this is the kind of idea behind regenerative learning. And that's the book that we have published to celebrate the 30 years of Schumacher College.
And I feel like I'm a living testimony that it works, and in the spirit of the gift must travel. It's such wonderful knowledge and such embodied knowledge that you feel a responsibility that you have to share it with others. And how do you see your work with Resurgence? Because that's another one of those amazing projects that you started and that have become kind of the inspiration for not just one, but many generations of readers.
Now, Resurgence magazine has been going on for 57 years. It was started in 1966. So we'll be celebrating in 3 years' time our 60th anniversary. And again, my thinking was that it is not just kind of intellectual ideas or criticism of what is going wrong in the world. Because most of our magazines, they only criticize. This is wrong, that is wrong, government is wrong, industry is wrong, business is wrong. Okay, but we need to go beyond what is wrong. And so Resurgence has been the resurgence of values, resurgence of spirit, resurgence of ideals, and what has already been like a perennial wisdom, but has always been there. Remember what we have and what is good in humanity and a beauty of nature and a beauty of planet Earth. And we need to express our gratitude as well as criticize and complain. And so Resurgence has always had that voice of holistic wisdom, so that we can also see good things in nature, good things in humankind, good things in our activism. Lots of people all around the world, like yourself, doing good things in the world at a grassroots level. And those people are not recognized. They don't have any voice. They don't have any place to write, place to express themselves. And therefore, Resurgence gives them a platform so that they can be an activist, not only talk about change, but be the change that they want to see in the world. So the Resurgence has been that platform, a world community of people who are thinking in a more creative and more imaginative way rather than just a critical way. So that has been a very satisfying work for me, to have writers, readers, contributors, supporters, friends, funders, all those have made together. And I'm very grateful to all those readers and writers and contributors who have sustained Resurgence for 57 years. So Schumacher College and Resurgence have been like a twin, two together. And one is an expression in a community where people can live together, work together, cook together, garden together, and form a community of activists and practitioners and thinkers and so on. And then Resurgence is to communicate those ideas to a wider audience, and it's inspiring.
Satish, your own life embodies these principles of spiritualism, activism, and intellectualism. Can you tell us a bit more about your own life journey and how you got started on this path?
Well, thank you. I mean, I have been very fortunate in my life because I have met some wonderful teachers. To start with, I would pay a great tribute to my own mother. She was a wonderful storyteller, a wonderful singer, a wonderful gardener, a wonderful milkmaid. Although she was not educated, she did not go to school, she did not read or write, or even sign her documents. She had to do a thumbprint. However, she was an example of a good woman who lived her values. And so my love for nature came from my mother. She would walk to our farm or garden. We had a 5-acre land, which can be a large garden, a small farm, a small holding. And we'll walk to our farm 2 miles away. And she will talk about trees, and she will talk about bees, and she will talk about flowers, she will talk about clouds, she will talk about lightning, she will talk about the seasons. Amazing love of nature. So having a companion like that is a great blessing, it's a great fortune. So my mother was a very spiritual person. She meditated every day. She sang songs. She told me stories. But then also my mother gave me a kind of adventurous spirit. And that adventurous spirit led me to do many things. So I became a Jain monk. I became a Gandhian. I walked around the world. I left India to come to England. I started Schumacher College. So all those things of adventure came to me from my mother. Also trusting. Trust the world. Trust the universe. Be courageous. Things will happen if you do something. Don't just sit there and think and talk and worry. Just act. And you act, something happens, something changes. But if you just worry, 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 nothing changes. That teaching of my mother has always helped me to act and do things rather than just think and worry.
I very often think of the story that you told me of when you started your journey as a pilgrim from India into Pakistan to walk to Moscow and to Paris and to London. Many friends wanted you to take their money to at least have a good start, to have a little bit of savings in your pocket for this long journey. And you said no, and you decided to start this journey. You had the trust to start this journey without a penny in your pocket with your friend. And I find that's really instructive. And having done that and having walked all the way to London after that, what you just said is so much more significant. It's an example of what you're expressing. There's a difference between knowledge and an embodied knowledge. And
absolutely. Also, not to be afraid of difficulties. Because when difficulties and problems come, that stimulates your thinking. And you imagine what the solution is. So use your imagination and your creativity, and you find a solution. So walking around the world, I walked through 15 countries, 8,000 miles, over 2.5 years. And I walked through Muslim countries, Christian countries, communist countries, capitalist countries, rich countries, poor countries, mountains, deserts, snow, forest, everything. And you can imagine for 2.5 years not touching money. And yet, strangers, complete strangers, whom I meet today and I will never meet again. And those strangers fed me, gave me shoes, gave me clothes, gave me ticket to cross the Atlantic, and so on and so on. So that happened because humanity can be trusted. If you trust, they will trust you back. But at the moment in our society, we suffer from a trust deficit disorder. We don't trust anybody. We don't trust even ourselves. And we are always dependent on money and security and insurance. We don't trust that humanity is good. I am good. I have courage. I have imagination. I have a creativity. I can do things. I can build things. I can speak. I can convince. I can argue. I can do anything I like. So that power that every human being holds is lost because we don't trust ourselves. If you trust yourself, then you have the power to act and to do things. If you don't trust yourself, how are you going to use your capacity to manifest?
Yeah, and how would we ever be able to trust life, to stop being fearful of more than human life and start becoming partners and gardeners in the regenerative process of life again, if we don't even trust ourselves? We have to be able to trust that if we step out of the way and life flows through us, then we know how to be regenerative. It's what you were saying earlier, that it's not about some kind of utopia we need to create. It's about changing our perspective and seeing that there is loving and caring in every mother's act, in every person who cares for their garden, for their children, for an elderly, all the things that we have pushed aside in our economic system, all the acts of caring are life's regenerative impulse coming through. And we need to trust that life itself has this beautiful regenerative capacity, that if we only step into that flow again, we can heal what we've broken.
Absolutely, yeah. Now, the thing is, because we have become so dependent on economy and money system, that we have replaced our trust with money. And everything has become a kind of instrument, a means to an end. And the end is economic growth. And so everybody is educated for the economy. Everybody is working for the economy. But education should be more than economy. Economy is only one small part of our life. And so I think that is a big cultural change and a cultural mistake and a civilizational mistake that we have made, that we have made humans into a resource instead of economy being a resource for human dignity. Similarly, that we have extended that into nature. And we say nature is only a resource. So human resources and natural resources. So nature has no integrity other than as a kind of means to an end. And the end is economic growth. So our biggest challenge at this moment is to rethink and bring back the human dignity and say HR should stand not for human resources, but human relationship. And then nature is not a resource for the economy, but nature is a source of life itself. And the nature and humans are not separate. We are as much nature as mountains and forests and animals and birds and all the rest. So we are all made of the same elements. And we all come from the same beginning. If you believe in the scientific imagination, then you call it Big Bang. So in the beginning, there was a Big Bang. And then over billions of years of evolution, water came, earth came, forests came, animals came, humans came, over billions of years. So we have all come from nature and we go back to nature. Humans, the word humans, Daniel, is made of humus. And humus in Latin means soil. So human beings are literally soil beings. So if we realize that we are nature, we are not separate from nature, we are not above nature, we are nature, and therefore living as nature and respecting and loving nature and loving each other and loving yourself and trusting yourself, that is a great wealth.
Satish, you've written extensively about love, and in particular the notion of radical love, love that unites us with the rest of the living world, which I think speaks to that interrelatedness and interdependence that you were just talking about. Can you tell us a bit more about that concept of radical love?
Yes. Now, there are two kinds of love in a kind of, to make it easy to talk about. One is moderate love and the other is radical love. Now, moderate love I call, which is you love someone who you like and you hope and expect that they will love you back. So it's a kind of relationship, which is good. I think we all need our basic moderate love, like bread and butter. We need it. But in order to maintain the whole ecosystem and human community in a more harmonious way, we need to have a more unconditional, unilateral, radical love without expectation, without any outcome, without any result, just unilateral, unconditional love for the sake of love. If you can rise to that high level of radical love, then you can maintain the integrity of nature and allow nature to be what it is and allow humans to be who they are and what they are and love them as they are. So I love without any condition, without any expectation. I love everyone, nature and humans and myself, unconditionally. That is radical love. So if we want to have harmonious, peaceful existence in the world, we have to love even those who are not working nicely and not well. You have to love prisoners. You have to love criminals. You have to love everybody and help them to rise above their criminality and injustice and so on. So helping them to rise above is different from condemning them, fighting them, killing them. So radical love is very radical and very revolutionary. And it's not easy. Radical love is not for the faint heart. It is for the courageous and brave and those who can bring themselves to act like that. And that was people like Mahatma Gandhi. He fought independence of India, but he did not hate the British. He said, British are as much my brothers and sisters as Indians are my brothers and sisters. No difference. And I will not want India's independence at the cost of any damage to Britain. I want Britain to be as happy as India and India to be as happy as Britain and equal terms. So that kind of spirit of generosity and openness and acceptance is radical love.
Satish, you just spoke about the notion of Savodaya, the rise of all. More and more, as in my own learnings, I'm trying to change my own perspective to seeing regenerative culture and ancient regenerative cultural roots manifesting anywhere in the world in order to, like little embers that are still present, fan those little embers so they can become a flame again. And more and more, I'm thinking that the Vedanta is a body of knowledge that to a large extent tries to express what living regeneratively actually means. And also some of the core concepts in Gandhian thinking, like self-sufficiency, self-reliance at the local and regional scale, but not in a kind of closing off from the world, but in a kind of cosmopolitan awareness of the world, that we have to meet our needs regenerative, humbly, in this place and help others to do the same in their place.
Yes. Sarvodaya literally means well-being of all, upliftment of all, empowerment of all, not a particular community or a particular class or a particular section of humanity, but empowerment of every single person, humans and more than humans. And now, in Sarvodaya, there is a meeting of universal and local. So we have two things in our existence. One is the mind, and the other is the body. Mind, in Gandhian terms, and also in Vedanta and Advaita Vedanta terms, mind is universal. We are not limited in our mind. We think well-being of all planets and whole of planet and all creatures, humans and other than humans, whole of cosmos. So cosmic mind is the one side. Our mind needs to be cosmic. But then our body has to be rooted in a place, in the soil, in the community, in the locality where we live, where we are born, where we grow our food. So body is rooted locally. Mind is expanded cosmically or globally. Gandhi had this amazing combination that the local and cosmic or global can dance together. Our mind has to be cosmic, but our body has to be local. I think that's a very beautiful concept because our body has to be local. We have to grow food in our garden. And if we import food from Australia, that will need a lot of fossil fuel. And if you use lots of fossil fuel, then you will create global warming and climate change. So this greed and desire for more material possessions comes because of this not understanding that we have to be rooted in our local community and local place. So Gandhi was a kind of cosmic localist. And he believed that if you have a relationship of love and friendship, that has to be expressed in the local community. So in order to have a spiritual practice, you need to have a community where you can work together, you can help each other, you can care for each other. So it's a decentralized Swaraj, self-government, self-organization, self-management. And Gandhi learned this from nature. Nature is decentralized. Nature is self-organized, self-managed. So I think we have to learn from nature. Nature is our greatest teacher. So Gandhi wanted human community to emulate and mimic nature. So that's a kind of combination of global and local is Sarvodaya.
With regard to the Vedanta, there's something about our Western, what Einstein called the illusion of consciousness, and Bateson has commented on this as well, and a number of people that have come to Schumacher College, like Joanna Macy and John Seed, this notion of self that locks us into our body. The Vedanta never holds that notion. It holds a notion that consciousness is what we take form in, if I'm correct. Could you speak a little, because I feel more and more that this kind of illusion of consciousness is also part of why we constructed a narrative of separation that somehow separates humanity from nature, as if culture and nature were separate. All of that comes from this false perception that we are locked inside of our skin. And the Vedanta has a wonderful way of reminding us that we're not.
Yes. In Vedanta, there's a word Maya. And that means that separation is an illusion. Maya means separation, that I and you are separate, is an illusion. We are all related. We are made of each other. We are all ultimately one. So an observer cannot exist without the observed, because I see the whole world in myself. And I see myself in the whole world. I see myself in the tree. And I see tree in myself. When I'm observing tree is in me. And when I am, and tree is observing me as much as I'm observing tree. And so this kind of non-separational unity of life manifesting in diverse forms is different. diversity is not against unity. Unity and diversity dance together. But the separation that Christians are separate from Hindus and Muslims and Australians are separate from Chinese, humans are separate from animals and nature, all separational thinking is Maya, illusion. We cannot exist, no electron, proton, atoms, particles, waves can exist by themselves. They all can exist only when they come together in relationship. And that relationship is the unity of life. Without me, there is no you. And without you, there is no me. We are totally interbeings, what Thich Nhat Hanh called interbeings, which is a very beautiful concept of Vedanta and Advaita. So Advaita means not two, beyond two, you can call it. So when I see the whole world in myself and myself in the whole world, then where is the difference between the observer and the observed? Where is the difference between the seer and the seen? Seen cannot be without the seer, and seer cannot be without the seen, because I am in the seer, and the seer is in me. So that's a kind of non-duality Vedanta philosophy. So if you go further and further and further, then the only thing what is non-material, and that's a relationship. And a relationship brings the matter together. And so this separational idea of matter and spirit separate is Maya, illusion. Relationship is reality, and relationship is non-material. So this is a kind of a subtle point that material exists only on the basis of spiritual or non-material, which is relationship. Relationship cannot be measured. Relationship cannot be counted, quantified, anything. But without that relationship, matter does not exist. And the true reality, the true ultimate reality of Vedanta and Advaita philosophy is relationship ultimately true reality. And all other existence of separate existence is Maya.
Wonderful. I'm so glad I asked, because I think so much of shifting towards regenerative practice is about shifting a worldview, shifting our way of seeing the world. And I think you just beautifully encapsulated that.
And I think as well, it takes us back to what we were talking about earlier around love, you know, love as unity is what unites and connects us. And as an expression of that sacred relationship that we share with all life. And I think that leads nicely on to the next question, Satish, which is around your phrase, soil, soul, and society, which you've actually described as a love trinity for the new age. And I just wondered, could you unpack the meaning of that phrase for us?
Yes. We like to communicate in a trinity way, like head, heart, and hands, because we need to rise above dualism. And the third element always comes to bridge the gap. And so soil is nature and society is humans. So these are two aspects which are physical and we can relate to. So we relate to nature and we relate to humans. But we don't quite often recognize, particularly in our modern materialistic world, we don't recognize the existence of anything which cannot be measured, which cannot be quantified. But heart qualities cannot be measured. Compassion and friendship and love cannot be measured, cannot be quantified. They exist. We feel it. We experience it, but they cannot be quantified. So I put soul in the middle to create that trinity. So the sense of the sacred is important to me. Trees are sacred. Animals are sacred. Human beings are sacred. Life is sacred. So this is why I brought this new trinity for our time, where our relationship with nature, our relationship with humans, and our relationship with our own inner dimension. Because outer change and outer transformation is not enough unless we have inner transformation. Change in our consciousness, change in our worldview, change in our thinking, change in our feeling. how we look at the world, how we relate to the world. These are inner dimensions. So this is why soul I brought in the middle to bridge the gap between our material relationship with nature and human society. And the soul is not just human quality. Soul is not just human attribute. Soul is everywhere. Animals have soul. Trees have soul. Soil has soul. Rivers and oceans have soul. So spirit and soul, the life, you can call it, soul is a life, is everywhere. Anima mundi, world soul. And for me, it's understanding the sacred quality of nature and reverence for nature and a kind of understanding that nature is not just for our use. Nature is life itself. And therefore, it's a kind of sense of the sacred, sense of the reverence for nature and respect for nature. And therefore, no misuse, no waste, no pollution. If you take one tree, plant five trees, replenishing and regenerating, that's the kind of regenerative culture that we are talking about. It's at the heart of soil, soul, society.
We're coming back where we started, the pilgrimage. Talking to you from an island that is heavily dependent on tourism, and you've been here many times on Mallorca, I hear you quoted a lot because you reminded the Mallorcans that what we need to do is we need to move from being tourists to being pilgrims. I find that notion and the embodiment of that notion in your life story, how to walk gently on this earth as an earth pilgrim, how to give more than you take, and how to become a pilgrim rather than a tourist. Beautiful.
I mean, we are on this planet and we can choose to live as tourists or as pilgrims. Now, if you live as a tourist, then you are expecting everything to be according to your desires, your needs. So you go as a tourist, you want good hotel, good house, good servants, everything for yourself. So that's a kind of touristic mind, which leads to more economic growth, more infrastructure building, more taking, taking, taking. And much of our economy, much of our systems, political, economic, social, educational, are very much driven by the touristic mindset. But the pilgrim has a light footprint on the planet. And taking what is your need and then giving back more than you take. So pilgrimage is more than going to some sacred places. Life is a pilgrimage for me. And living on this planet as an earth pilgrim is everyday activity. So how I can take less from the earth, give more to the earth, be regenerative and be harmonious and live with gratitude. I am every day full of gratitude for the sunshine, for the rain, for the flowers, for the birds. Thank you, soil, that you are feeding me. Thank you, river, you are giving me water. Thank you, sun, you are giving me photosynthesis. This gratitude for every, and the humans, my wife who has been with me for 50 years, how grateful I am for June. My children who look after me when I had my knee operation, I'm grateful for every moment. That's the mindset of a pilgrim. Pilgrim is always full of gratitude and love and acceptance. Whereas tourist mindset is always complaining, always criticizing, always demanding, never enough, never good enough. That's a touristic mindset. And we are very much now educated and kind of encouraged to be critical, to be complaining, to demand more, to nothing is enough. More, more, more. This is the kind of touristic mind that we have developed. So I think if we want a regenerative future for humanity, we need to live on this planet as Earth pilgrims.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed episode 2 of Regeneration Rising Series 2. If this episode has inspired your thinking, please check out the show notes for links and resources and to find out how you can be part of the regeneration.
In celebration of the launch of Regeneration Rising, we're offering a special promotion for listeners to join our global community of RSA Fellows. Our fellowship is a network of over 31,000 innovators, educators, and entrepreneurs committed to finding better ways of thinking, acting, and delivering change. To receive a 25% discount off your first year of membership and a waived registration fee, visit the rsa.org and use the discount code RSAPOD on your application form. See the show notes for terms and conditions.